Hello, and welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It seems like just about every day we learn something new about PFAS here in Michigan, from new contamination sites to health effects to what levels of contamination should trigger public health warnings and warrant a cleanup. Until now, when we talk about contamination by per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, we've been focused almost solely on how these chemicals impact our drinking water supply. But a recent MLive article by Paula Gardner raised an important question. Just how much do we know about PFAS contamination in the air we breathe? With us is Jamie DeWitt, a Michigan native who's a toxicologist at East Carolina University. Jamie, what do we know about PFAS emissions in our air?
Unfortunately, we don't know as much as we need to know to understand how humans are exposed. We know that many types of PFAS can be commonly found in precipitation, such as rain and snow. We also know that they can be found in house dust. We don't know if they get into house dust from the products that people bring into their homes or if they're carried in through ambient air. We have scientists who are trying to understand this particular problem, but our level of understanding is not as broad as it should be.
And it is worth it's worth the reminder when we talk about these chemicals that they're in so many products that, as you say, we bring into our homes.
Exactly. I just read an article last week on a study that looked at PFAS in different types of dental flosses. And I was very unhappy to find out that one of my favorite dental flosses is contributing to the concentrations of one of the PFAS known as PFHXS in my body. That's one of the longer-lived PFASs. So now I'm going to have to change my dental floss.
And you're a professional. So as a toxicologist, you understand much more than the average person does about these many chemicals. We're not just talking one or two. So I guess as a researcher, where are your areas of concern?
Well, one of the areas that I study in my laboratory is how these compounds affect the immune system. And we evaluate individual compounds and their ability to impact what would be similar to a vaccine response in humans. And we're trying to understand those molecular mechanisms that lead to a poor vaccine response, which is one of the health effects that we know occurs in humans. But I said we evaluate these compounds one at a time. One of the issues that's really challenging to the scientific community is that we think that there are more than 5,000 individual PFASs, and only a handful of them have really been extensively studied for their ability to produce health effects in living organisms.
Are there any places, contaminated sites in the U.S. that you know of where there might be good reason to suspect that PFAS is causing health problems because of its presence in the air?
I think that's a very challenging question to answer. I think one of the best studies that we have is the C8 Science Panel study from the population in the Ohio and West Virginia area where there was a PFOA production facility. We were able to model, or the epidemiologists for that particular study were able to model what humans took in through drinking water, but their models didn't account for all of the exposures, and that suggests that additional exposures other than drinking water are likely. It could be through our food. It could be through the atmosphere. We still haven't fully described all of the different ways by which people can get exposed to PFAS.
You know, it's interesting as I talk with other scientists who are digging into what PFAS could mean for us, I have to ask, why is it that we so often hear that we really don't know and we need to find out? Why is there so little research on PFAS, considering these chemicals have been in wide use for decades, no?
I think part of the problem is that very often scientists like me, who are independent academic scientists, perform research that is reactionary. We don't get funded to study compounds before they're already an environmental problem. So we ramp up the amount of work that we do based on the amount of funding that we can get, but we have to be able to demonstrate that there's a problem. We now know that there's a problem, so people are getting funded to study these compounds, and that will lead to an explosion in the amount of data that comes out of independent research academic laboratories.
So if more science comes out that provides more proof that PFAS is in the air we breathe, what does that mean? How much of a game changer is that in your view?
Well, Well, it really depends on how the state and federal regulatory agencies react. They have the authority to make decisions about whether or not different uses are restricted, whether or not emissions have to be capped in some way. They need data to make those decisions, and they need data to be able to support the decisions that they make. And so their reaction will be in response to the types of data that are produced by all of the different laboratories that are engaged in these, in understanding these chemicals at this point in time.
We've heard so much about the studies of the water. Are there ongoing studies into airborne transmission?
I'm actually part of a team here in North Carolina. We're known as the PFAS Testing Network. We're part of a study that was funded by the North Carolina Policy Collaboratory, which received an infusion of money from the NC legislature. And we are trying to understand how PFASs move around the state of North Carolina. I'm doing some air sampling, or I'm working with people to do air sampling. We're looking at rainwater contamination, and there are sites across the state that will allow us to understand how far these compounds travel from a potential source of release or emission. And so what the data that we generate here in North Carolina will help other states to maybe understand what may be happening in their own environments.
When do you think you'll be done? When do you think you might know?
Well, it may be decades before we ever surely know, but we need to have a final report into our legislature by the end of this calendar year, so we will have information on at least the extent and distribution of some of these contaminants here in our state by the end of this year.
It makes one kind of stop and think, shouldn't that have all been figured out before chemicals are unleashed? So you're, like you say, right now it's reactive. So you in the academic institutions around the country are trying to kind of, it sounds to me like, clean up the mess that has been unleashed by these things being rushed out onto the market and embraced.
We are playing catch up, and some companies do have data that they've produced that they submit to various regulatory agencies. As a public citizen, those are sometimes challenging for me to get. I can submit a Freedom of Information Act request to get some of those data. Some of those data are searchable through publicly available databases, but they're not often in that literature that I might peruse as I go through the science that has been published. And that's one of the, I guess, gaps or loopholes in our system today. Some of the data produced by the companies that make these compounds aren't available to citizens.
Jamie DeWitt spelling out challenges in trying to just figure out exactly how PFAS is getting into our atmosphere and into our world. She's a toxicologist at East Carolina University. We want to thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you for letting me talk to you. Appreciate it.